7 years ago.
47 years ago.
And that's next Sunday, I believe it is, ain't something like that.
Yes, today's the 23rd. That's right.
But I always wanted a brother, wasn't anybody, and had a brother. But I'm going to tell you, he was notorious. Oh, boy, he was a bad boy. And, but I couldn't, I reckon little old Harrison, his Harrison was his given name, Harrison Waltrip was his name. And he was raised up here at Tocoa, Georgia, above Atlanta, that's where he was raised at.
He about your age?
No, he was 10 years older now.
Uh-huh.
He was your brother, though, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
And he stayed with you for
24 years, and some days, maybe we can tell you, 24 years and some days. And he died with creeping paralysis. He wasn't able to do anything. Had to have help to get up and down for the last 2 years he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I don't reckon that there's anybody in the world that he ever loved more than he did Mabel. Now he
and that's the reason she's so spoiled.
Yeah, that's the reason she's so damn rotten. And you know, he told me one day he was coming out, going in the barn, and I was fixing to go somewhere. And he told me, he said, wait a minute there, I imagine I was going to see her, I don't know. I said, I want to see you. Well, that wasn't very often he ever said anything like that, you know, and I just couldn't imagine what he was talking about. He come out there and he says, now, says, if you going with this girl for a good purpose, says, that's all right. But says, now, says, if you've got any of them mad damn ideas that you generally have, says, now you forget it, him. I thought of myself, and he hadn't known the girl very long. He'd met her, that's about all. We went to an opera show, they used to have opera shows, and we'd buy a season ticket, you know. And
you see that handsome fella?
What is it?
That woodpecker.
Oh, did he come up there?
Yeah, see him? He's on the flat place over there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
See, he's just sitting there cramming, ain't he? Just cramming that suet. And he advertised it. While he's doing it, he talks. Just talks to everybody. He says, look what I got. Now that's your Cardinal Bank.
Oh, yeah. Them bad things is pretty on it.
Pretty,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never heard. What did the fellow Lewis, what was his object in scaring the niggas off?
I don't really know. Only this fella that he lived on his place, and Mr. Rutland had a lawsuit about 490 acres of this place.
Oh, yeah.
They had a lawsuit about it, and whether that was it or not, I don't know.
Now that's Ms. Cardinal up there now. See, both of them.
Yeah.
That's on the WPA, as we used to say, you know. Oh, he's feeding her. She's just sitting there, and he's doing the feeding.
He's picking it up, giving it to her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See that? Wow. And then they flew over. He flew over there. They must. She must be on a nest. He must be nesting. Well, how did he, what happened to him?
Lewis?
Uh-huh.
He's still there. You know, last year, he's still, he's dead, but his children is around now. And I tell you, he had three, four boys and two girls.
Uh-huh.
And he had one grown girl, and that was the most beautiful girl I have ever seen.
You knew all of them?
Yeah, I knew them all. And there's two of them worked for Mr. Rutland, I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
And
did you ever run into him again?
Oh, yeah, many a time. A whole lot of times I run into him. A lot of times.
But you didn't shoot him?
No, I didn't shoot him. He damn sure didn't bother nobody, but especially when I was down there by myself now.
Yeah.
He sure didn't bother me. Oh, if he had, I'd have shot him sure in the world. There wasn't no question about
you
that.
You were 15.
Well, Phil, how'd he scare him off?
You know, he'd take a box of matches and burn them. Then he put a pistol cartridge in it and maybe a little hair out of your head and rolled up and put in the box, you know, and shoved it through the cat hole of the nigger's door, you know. And then he'd draw a picture of a coffin on the door.
Yeah.
And pick up some little bitty old roots and wrap them up and wrap some hair around it, then wrap some red flannel around that, you know,
yeah.
And put on the nigger's water bucket on his doorsteps. Used to back then, there's two things that nigger looked when he come home. Was under that water bucket, they generally had it on the shelf out on the porch, you know, and under his doorstep. Now, he look on them places. And if he found anything peculiar about it, nine times out of ten, he wouldn't say anything about it, but he'd be ready to move. You could just look out there and see the wagon backed up his back door and his chickens caught and ready to go. Now, that's right. Nigger is back then was very peculiar people, you know. They was uneducated. Well, this old man Lewis's people, there wasn't one of them could read, him, none of the boys. But his wife could read, and they taken the Macon News. And after supper, she had to sit down and read everything in that to them children. Well, if it was a year, 2 years, or 3 years, it didn't make any difference. Either one of them could quote anything that they read, their mother read to them out of that paper. They knowed it. Well, my brother, he was quite a clown sometimes. And one of them was helping him hold some cotton over there. He had a patch of cotton, and he was helping my brother hold that cotton.
That's one of the Lewis boys.
He told Good, he said, Good said, you got any education? Good said, yes. Lewis says, can you read? Yes, I can read. Said, well, can you write? He said, oh, yes, says, I can write. He'd say, now, Good just have something to say. He says, can you? He said, no, said, I didn't go to school but one day. And said, I didn't learn but one thing. Good said, what is that? He took his finger and he made the dirt a big S. He said, oh, yes, that's That's an S. He said, and I don't give a damn if I forget that. I said, you that thing, I do you still that it gets thicker than that. But now, my first cousin, when she graduated from high school, and she went to junior college 2 years, and she went to teaching school down there in that neighborhood. And I was talking to her about that place down there. They called it the Bloody Ninth District.
Yeah.
And she said
District.
That one of these Lewis boys was on the board of directors or trustees or what he called to her school. When he was down there, come down there and went to work, his wife, he married old Liz Edith's daughter over there across a lot of creek. And when she come over and spend the weekend with him, and then she'd go back to her mama. And he couldn't talk very plain, but he'd come up there and was telling Jill about his wife leaving and going back home. He couldn't keep her there to help him to make a crop and all like that. And wanted him to go over and get her. So Jill told me, he said, Phil says, you go over and get Katie. Katie was her name. And they've been married 5, 6, 7 months. And says, go over and get her and bring her home. I just asked him, I said, can I beat hell out of him? He said, yeah, go ahead if you want to. I went over there, I told her, I said, Katie, I said, let's go home. I said, Henry, at her husband, I said, he wants you. She said, well, I'll be back this afternoon or tomorrow. I said, no, you ain't, you going now. And I reached down and got one of them old gold bear brush brooms where you sweep the yard with. I pulled one of them out. I said, now besides that, they told me to beat hell out if you didn't come. And that's what I'm going to do. You know, I didn't have a bit of trouble. That woman, she got in the car and I carried on back there. And you know, after then she come up and ask us, could she go to see her mom?
Phil, was good. Was he as mean as you were?
Oh my God, son, I wasn't in it at all. Not at all. I never was in jail but once in my life. And I really don't know what jail up at it had been in. And fooling with niggers and sorry white people all my life. I never killed one. I never killed nobody. He's killed 5. And Buddy, the lesson he killed gave me a lot of trouble too. Now him, that was up here at Folkestone, Georgia.
Yeah.
He walked up the street, got a .22 rifle, and come back and shot 2 and killed 1. And he'd give me a lot of trouble. No, sir. That brother of mine, he was a...
Well, did he ever plow any?
Yeah, he was a good farmer, and he plowed, and for as far as that's concerned, he could do anything, handle this heavy equipment, road equipment, and all like that. These big mills where they have these cranes and all, he could do all that kind of stuff. He could do most anything he wanted to do. And
well, how'd you take such a dislike to plowing, to farming?
My daddy, when I was coming up, always said that he was going to get a farm and put me to plowing. And I reckon that's where I got the dislike for it. He was always threatened that he was going to get him a farm. And I never will forget, we had to rent a farm one time to get a house to live in after I left from down there. And Harrison said, let's plant this here field here in cotton. We broke it up and laid it all and planted in cotton. And I was chopping the cotton out and he was siding it up and plowing it. Ben him stopped to rest and I asked him, I says, Harrison, I says, if we make a good crop here, I said, how many bales of cotton will we to make on this here place? He said, about 2 bales. Then cotton was about 6-7 cents a pound, you know, 8, something like that. 5 times 8 is 40. I says, you mean to say $40 a bale or something like that, or $50 a bale or $60, and we make 2 of them? He said, yeah. I said, I'll be damned if I ain't done quit this right now. And I went up there, a fellow Sam Calhoun, he was a good friend of mine. I said, Sam, I told Harrison, I said, hell, I said, I can make more money than this shooting crap. And I said, I know I ain't going to do this. And I went up there and told Sam Calhoun, I said, Sam, I said, that patch is planted down there. And I said, about 1/3 of it is chopped out. And I says, I ain't gonna chop no more of it. I says, if you want it, you can have it. And that was my farming. Now, I chopped the cotton. I never plowed in. I plowed my first furrow over here where I live. But when got to thinking about, you know, that I had to chop that cotton, cultivate it and hoe it at least one time, and then pick it and haul it to the gin and have it gin, and then I had $40 worth of stuff there. Why, I couldn't see that.
Well, Phil, you know, but a farmer had such a nice life. Nobody out there, you see, the
well, you
orders,
know, no. I never could see that. Get up before day and start milk the cows and slop the hogs and feed the chickens and all that mess, and then go to work about daylight. That never did appeal to me. Now, it did to a lot of people. And there's one thing about a farmer. He can lose this year. But if he can scrape up enough money to get some seed and stuff, he'll sure the devil plant next year.
He won't give up.
Yeah, and he can lose then. Well, maybe he ain't got nothing to do but to mortgage his place for something to fertilize and seed and supplies to make another crop. If he makes it, why, he'll do it again. But if he don't, why, that's the end of him. Now, that's the way it generally works, isn't it? Now, that's right.
Well,
And people up there in that country have pretty good farm, making pretty good living. And they have hard luck and didn't make nothing this year and all like that. Well, they go and borrow, what they say, a long loan on the place. And they could get about $5 to maybe $10 an acre. Only get that much. Well, you could just figure right then they had sold it. That's right. And to go into something like that, well, I just never could see it. That didn't appeal to me at all. And when I come to Florida, I stopped down there on the railroad waiting for the truck. And I had one of them loaded, truck with a trailer on it. I had it loaded. And you know, I sat down there and fought them mosquitoes about, I reckon, 45 minutes, an hour before they come. And I said, well, I'd give $17,000 cash for that timber. And the reason I guess I bought it, that nobody else never could get it, I was the fourth one that tried to get it. I didn't know that then, but later, that was just a sham. That was donating $17,000 for him. I'd never get no timber. Because water in there was anywhere from, I say, 3 foot to 8 foot deep. And Mr. Franklin didn't know me. And I just wish that I was able to throw away that much money that I'd have turned around and went back to Georgia. I hated this Florida worse than anybody in the world. Well, I said, well, if I'm getting along pretty good, I said, I won't have but about a year to stay here. Well, old man Turner over there joined that place on the other side of the railroad. And then old man in the bank up there, you know.
Pfeiffer,
he owned the other. And I bought it, and I stayed down there about a year and a half. But we were down here about 3 or 4 months. And Mabel said, Phil said, I want you to go up there and see my farm. I said, what? Look at my farm. I said, Mabel, for God's sake, you ain't bought nothing down here, have you? She said, yeah. I said, I bought it. I said, how much did you pay for it? She said, $1,200. I thought, well, that wasn't hard to lose. My God, I lost that many a time in 1 week. And, because the business was I was in was very ticklish. It was very much like a poker game. And I didn't mind that. I didn't mind losing the $1,200. So I said, oh, well. I said, that's all right. But after checking with her and some lawyer, she didn't have no deed. She didn't have nothing. Well, I did give her $190, I think, to have the place quieted through court and abstract made and all like that. Cost $190. I give her that. And
she done the rest.
Yeah. It was generally the way she done things like that about the ring that she bought. She stole a carload of Cypress lumber and paid for that ring.
Stole it off of you, I guess.
I give her, I guess, 4 or 5 bills there, car numbers and all like that to come up here and get bills laden for this lumber and who they went to, you know. So one of them, she shipped 3 or 4 of them. I didn't know nothing about it. Till she told me a carload of lumber down there didn't make much difference. I was cutting about 2-3 a day, you know, something like that. And this was just boards. She sent one of them to an old buddy of her, an old man, Mac Cypress Company in Jacksonville. Me and her was walking down Main Street in Jacksonville just a few days before Christmas, and we passed along by Duval Jewelry Store and stopped there, and they had the showcase with diamond rings in there, and I guess this one was about the best one in there, and we looked at them, and she asked me, she said, "What you want me to give you for Christmas?" I said, "That diamond ring back there in the show window." And I didn't have no idea. That's just something to say. Went on down by Claude Nolan's place, you know, he sells Cadillacs and Pontiacs just across the street. And she said, "What are you going to give me?" I said, "One of them Cadillacs over in Claude Nolan's place." Christmas Eve, I seen some guy come out of the house down there that was kind of dressed up and unusual and all like that, but I didn't ask no questions. That next morning, she gave me the ring. And then I went to ask Nancy. "Mabel," I says, $366. I said, "Mabel," I said, "where in the world did you get $366? She says, "You know, yeah, week before last or sometime you sent me up here to get bill laden for them cars of lumber." I said, "Yeah." Said, "I sent old man Mac one of them," and said, when the check comes, said, "That's what I paid for the ring with."
You got your match.
Huh?
She matches you, doesn't she?
So that's evidently where she got the money to pay for the place. She stole it.
Stole it, yes.
Oh, my.
Let's see if them cows have come up.
Hi, Claire.
Well, I sit there. I enjoy sitting. I don't get to sit much.
I tell you.
But you know, Phyllis Harrison, everybody folks.
They cut it off. We were walking out, and that's channel 2 over around 350. Channel 2 over around 350. And we just got to a stopping place, and it lasted for an hour and say 15-20 minutes. That was long. And this gas man from Williston came in. He wouldn't talk.
Phil gave him a chance, but he wouldn't go ahead, so Phil picked up on something else. Channel 2 over, round 350. Thursday, the 24th or 5th, somewhere along there, of April 1970. Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over. That's for dinner, middle of the morning. I went by and got Phil, borrowed Phil from Mabel for a little free advice. I want to put some Bahia in the, up there in the front pasture where the rye and oats are now. It's Channel 2. We went over there and stayed just a minute and then came over here and talked all the rest of the morning. Now, this is a beautiful count of time. He's 13, 14, 15 years old when he'd getting started up there. And it's a picture of those colored people and the sharecroppers and Mr. Rutland and Miss Maggie who'd come out there to put him in shape. This is 360 now, Channel 2 over. Thursday morning, 24th, 5th of April, 1970.